Have you ever wondered what heaven will be like? If heaven exists, what kind of existence is it going to be? Is it going to be us in a spirit-formed body or lack of a body, sitting on a cloud, playing a harp, singing some songs like you see in the cartoons? Are we going to be walking around with Jesus? Is it going to be a worship service 24/7? These are the questions we're going to look at today at Whiskey in the Writings, and we're going to get to the bottom of what heaven will be like. Thanks for joining us. Let's get started. Hi, everybody. I am really excited about today's episode, not simply because we're going to talk about a subject that really matters to me, an idea of what heaven will be like for us, but we're going to be drinking a non-whiskey today. Now, I know what you're thinking. This is Whiskey in the Writings. We've got to be drinking a whiskey. But I'm really excited today because I have with me a special bottle of tequila. Now, why am I bringing tequila to a Whiskey in the Writings episode? Well, recently I had the pleasure to go to Mexico with some friends, and we spent a 50th birthday party with one of my closest friends, and we were doing some tequila tasting there, and I came across this bottle of tequila. And why I think it matters is because this particular bottle of tequila, a code 1316 is what it's called, code 1316, was aged in whiskey barrels. So, although it's a tequila, we're going to open up today and have a taste of this code 1316 tequila extra añejo. That's why you get the color, so it even looks like a whiskey, guys. So extra añejo, so you have añejo, you have extra añejo. Extra añejo has just been aged in a barrel for a longer period of time, which gives it this color, at least that's what I was told. And so it just is an aged longer tequila. It's gonna probably have some smokiness from the whiskey barrel, but it's going to be a little bit sweeter too than your traditional tequila. These kinds of tequilas are sippers. So if you're used to tequilas that you just shoot and you wonder how we're going to get through an episode shooting tequila, that's not what you do with this tequila. We sip this tequila because it's not cheap for one, and it's really good. So we're actually doing a unboxing, if you were. I have not opened this since we've been home from Mexico. I'm just gonna throw that down there. I'll pick it up later. Sorry if that's really loud in the mix. I'll have to work on that, but here we go. Yes, I'll get to the bottom of this. Now, I love this. I love this bottle. It's a super fun bottle, but what I really like is this top. And what happens is that if you're pouring it upside down, it'll actually fill up this top, and then that's what you can actually pour into your glass of whiskey. However, I learned this from my friend Joel. Yeah, my friends, Joel and Jenny, because they have some tequila that has a similar top. And what they do is instead of using this to pour into their glass, they like to save what's in this top for the very end, because as they finish a nice bottle of tequila, it's a nice little treat to have what's left there in the top. So I'll probably do the same, but we're going to go ahead and open this up. Try not to spill. Here we go. All right. Boom. All right. So there's the top. We're going to set that right there. And what do we got here? That smells good. So we're going to pour some of this. My wife Jane's going to be bummed that I'm pouring this without her. I'm going to have to give her a little bit when I'm done filming today. So here we go in my Whiskey in the Writings tumbler here. We've got some tequila that has been aged in a whiskey barrel. So hopefully I'm not cheating. Technically I'm not cheating, but that's what we have here. Code 1316. Super excited to share this with y'all. Here we go. Man, just how I remember it. It's got a caramel kind of taste to it, which makes it super unique for a tequila. Very caramely, I guess, if that's a word. But anyway, that's our drink for today. Tequila aged in whiskey barrels straight from Sayulita, Mexico. Cheers. All right, folks, we're going to look at what heaven is like. And today on this episode, we're going to look at three areas of the text that helps paint a picture for us to help us understand a little bit of what heaven will be like. But first, I want to talk about some misconceptions that we have about heaven. Most familiar to me growing up was watching Tom and Jerry. The cartoon. And so I'd watch Tom and Jerry or a Looney Tunes episode, and inevitably someone in an episode dies, like dynamite or an anvil gets dropped on him or whatever. And what you see is this, like, the spirit of Tom gets lifted up, and he's up and he rises up to the sky, and maybe there are other spiritual beings around him, angels, and they're sitting on clouds and they're playing harps, and it's this cloudy kind of ethereal experience. That's what my vision of heaven was like when I was a kid. I've seen examples of, like, comic strips where it's like you go in front of pearly gates and Peter's standing at the gate and he's looking to see if your name's on it, and the gates will open up, and if not, then you go down to the other place. There are examples in movies and all over popular culture about what heaven will be like, and in my opinion, they all fall short, some worse than others. For example, the Tom and Jerry spirit being lifted from your body and going up into the clouds is just not biblical. And so we're going to look at what is the biblical example of what heaven will be like. Now, if you're wondering the question, well, how do I know where I go when I die? Lucky for you, I made a video about that. So I'll link to that in the show notes. You can look at where do we go when we die type of question. But today we're going to look at, okay, so we are with God forever. What does that actually look like? What are we going to be doing? I remember early on in my ministry career, and even a little bit before that, the concepts of heaven were always shaped around like a forever church service, maybe minus the preaching, where it's like all these Christians come together and they're just worshiping and they're in the presence of Jesus and there's this connectedness. So there are those images, again, not biblical, but these are the thoughts that we have. And so I want to actually look at the text, and I'm going to propose some ideas about what heaven will be like. Now, here's the thing, guys. I don't know, right? No one knows. Even those who have a death experience and then they have claimed to go to heaven, oftentimes portray a picture of that experience that's just not found in the Bible. And so we're gonna look at what the text is setting up for us. Then we're going to ask questions about what does that mean for us in the forever state. And so that's what we're doing today. Again, this is just a lot of Joe, years of studying the text, reading about this. Here's my opinion. So if this is just too in left field for you and you want to hold on to that kind of like my body's bad and my spirit's good point of view, if you want to hold on to like, I like the idea of a 24/7 worship service, right? Like, what you do you, right? So here's just another thought. And maybe during this time, I can cause us to think a little bit differently about the concept of heaven and what that means for us, you know, when we spend forever with Jesus. So that's where we're at. And we're going to begin our reading and our looking at the text in Genesis chapter 1. Now, if you've been following the channel for any period of time so far, you'll know that this is a popular chapter for us. Chapter 1 and 2 and parts of chapter 3, I believe, are the foundation stones to the whole building of what God is up to in the world, and particularly in the stories that are told about him in the text that we have called our Bible. And so Genesis 1, 2, and parts of 3 are just so foundational that it's really hard to build any type of theological point of view without letting these portions influence the outworking of our beliefs. And so we're looking at this again, and we're going to look at particularly verse 27, verse 28, and potentially verse 29 of your Bibles. I'm reading out of the NET. This is my favorite Bible to read out of. The New English Translation, whatever you have in front of you, is sufficient. So we're going to take a look here. What does Genesis 1 have to say about the humans? So in verse 27, God created humankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and every creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I now give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the entire earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the animals of the earth and every bird of the air and to all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has living breath in it, I give every green plant for food. It was so. And so we have here this declaration, this statement of vocation to these humans. It goes from identity, who we are image bearers, into vocation. What are you here to do? What's the point of me being here? And why this is important is because it's the setup for how God intends the earth to function and run. And so the things that we've got to wrestle with is when we are believing about the afterlife as if it's someplace that is other than here, we've got to contend with the reality of, like, if God set it up this way, why would he abandon it for something entirely different? If God's original plan was for these humans to fill the earth, which is the space we're at, to occupy this place and then to be a part of its governing and ruling, to do something with it, if your view of forever in heaven is away from here, then you've got to contend with, well, then did God change his mind? At what point did he change his mind? Why would he set it up this way if in the end he intended to actually not do that after all? But that's not the case. So at the very beginning, we have to see that whatever the forever is, it's going to involve us here on earth fulfilling the mandate that God originally intended for us to do. Okay? It's involving us. It is here, utilizing this earth, and fulfilling the oversight of this earth. That's what Genesis 1 is doing. Genesis 2 kind of enters in a little bit. It's a sequel to chapter 1. Again, if you have questions about that, go see my Genesis series. But in it, you have now a garden that exists. So God plants a garden on this earth. It's the space where God and the humans can coexist. Okay. What you shouldn't picture in your head is that this garden is filling the entire earth. What you should picture is that the earth is formed, and then in a spatial designation, this garden exists where God and the humans can coexist, and they're to go out of the garden and do their Genesis chapter 1 work, but they can also be in the garden to actually coexist with God. And out of that garden flows these rivers, and these rivers become a source of life and energy. It says this in Genesis chapter 2, verse 8. Then the Lord God planted an orchard in the east, in the Eden, and he placed the man he had formed there. The Lord made all kinds of tree grow from the soil, things that were pleasant for and good for food. And the tree of the knowledge of good and evil were in the middle of the orchard. And then he says in verse 10, now a river flows from Eden to water the orchard. And from there, it divides into four head streams, the name of these. And so he gives these name designations. So you picture out of this place, it's actually, there's rivers that split into four different rivers that actually became a source of nourishment in life. Now, why is that important? Okay, because this is the setup, and the biblical authors carry that idea forward. For instance, you have a writing in Ezekiel. Ezekiel is a major prophet in the Old Testament. He speaks on behalf of God to the nation. And in it, he's beginning to explain what the temple of God is like. And in chapter 47, you have some specific language about the temple of God and how rivers are flowing out of it. Now, immediately our mind should go to Genesis chapter 2. The temple, Eden, is like a temple on earth where rivers flow out of it. Ezekiel's picking right up on that language, and he describes a temple where river runs out of it. But then he begins to give us a little bit more information about what that river's doing. And we're going to pick it up on verse 12. This is Ezekiel 47, verse 12. On both sides of the river banks. Okay, so you have a river flowing out of the temple, and then you have the river banks, right? Picture it in your head. Every kind of tree will grow for food. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fall, but they will bear fruit every month. Because their water source flows from the sanctuary, their fruit will be for food and their leaves for healing. Okay, so you got the picture, right? This is a Genesis chapter 2 language. We just got done reading about how Eden and then a river flows out of it, and it's a source of life. Here again, we have the temple of God, a river flowing out of it, and on the banks you have these trees that are growing, and these trees are bearing fruit every month for food. And a question we got to ask ourselves, food for who? Okay, so immediately, if your imagination is a bodiless existence, we don't need food as spirits, do we? Maybe, maybe not. I don't think so. In a Platonic point of view, right, this doesn't make sense. So there's food involved that these fruit produce. Secondly, there's another thing. There's leaves on these trees, and these leaves have a designation of healing. So here's something to ponder. If Ezekiel is picking up on this Genesis 2 language and describing the reality of God's kingdom when it is in full reality here on this earth, that there's a river that flows out, it's for food and healing, and its leaves are for healing. The question we got to ask ourselves is, who needs healing? And in eternity and in heaven, who needs food? Do we need food? Who is this for? Why is this here? Interesting. Now, if you think that's the end of it, you're wrong. So Ezekiel's picking up on 2, and he uses specific language, mapping it on Genesis 2, but he's not the only one that does it. And I bet you can guess where we're turning next. At the very end of your Bibles, we have in Revelation 21 and 22, the description that John gets through this apocalyptic vision, this revealing, or that's what apocalypse means. It means to reveal or to uncover something that's hidden. It's not about like an end war finality as much as it is about a revealing of something that's been hidden. So John's been given a vision of something that people have not seen, a hidden thing, and he's writing about that. And in Revelation chapter 22, this is what he says. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life. Now we have another river, right? Rivers are all over the place. Water clear as crystal, pouring out from the throne of God and the Lamb. If you have a throne of God, where does the throne of a deity belong? In a temple. Where's the river flowing from? The throne, the temple, Ezekiel. Down the middle of the city's main street, and on each side of the river, Ezekiel talking now, right, is the tree of life, producing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. What did Ezekiel tell us in 47? Every month of the year, it's producing fruit. Its leaves are for what? Healing of the nations. And there will no longer be any curse, and the throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city. Okay, if you're following with me so far, your mind needs to picture that. The ultimate reality of forever was established in Genesis 2, distorted in Genesis 3, the vision of its return in Ezekiel 47, and the finality of that vision in Revelation 22. Here we have a vision of the kingdom of God in full display and in full power and in full effect. And out of there is a river where there is a tree of life that provides fruit every month, food, and healing. Its leaves provide healing. And once again, if Revelation, right, you might go, well, I don't know if Ezekiel 47 is talking about forever eternity, right? It is, but we can set that aside. No one disagrees that Revelation 21 and 22 are talking about the forever status of humans. And here we have again the question we've got to wrestle with. Who needs healing in eternity? Who needs food, fruit. So what's happening here? What's going on in this reality of forever? Now, there's a couple things I want to point out. Revelation 21 in particular. This is the setup of what we see in Revelation 22, the river flowing out of the city. The setup for that is this. Then I saw, this is Revelation 21, verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth ceased to exist. And the sea existed no more. Okay, so there's a couple concepts here, okay? The earth, heaven and earth ceasing to exist does not mean that God blew it up and then built something brand new. What it is saying is that the elements that were consuming our earth, i.e. death, destruction, pain, suffering, sin, whatever you want, these things that we go, man, if God's good, these things wouldn't exist. We go, yeah, these things are here and they're covering the earth. And it says that earth that we know that we see today will no longer exist. Not meaning it's going away, but that it's being burnt away. This is like 2 Peter language, that the former things will be burnt away in a fiery furnace. It's not to burn away to destroy, but to burn away to reveal. This is an apocalyptic vision, to reveal what actually should exist. And so the new heaven and new earth isn't a brand new thing. It is the return or the revealing of what the original was supposed to be. It's like taking your car and it's been sitting outside in the elements for months or maybe in a year, and then you take it to a car wash and it washes away all the impurities of the dirt and the grime and whatever, and it reveals the car for what it was supposed to be, right? This is what we're talking about here, okay? Then he says the sea will exist no longer. Well, what are we talking about, the sea? Or is there not going to be? I love the ocean. Why wouldn't there be an ocean? Okay, the sea in biblical narrative represented a chaos monster, the thing that brings chaos and disorder. And so it's not talking about the sea as if like the Sea of Galilee won't exist or, you know, whatever sea that you sit on the beach. No, those things are God's beauty. That's God's creation. What will not exist is disorder. And that's what the sea represented in ancient biblical narratives. So that's what it's talking about there. Disorder, chaos will no longer exist in God's world. And then he makes a city. And then it says, look. This is verse 3. Look, the residence of God is among human beings. He will live among them, and God himself will be with them. So whatever reality of forever that you have, what you shouldn't have is that we leave this place to go be with God. What you should have is that God comes down here to be with us. Now, why? Why does God come down to be with us? The answer is back at the beginning, okay? Because remember how I said Genesis 1, 2, and 3 are like formational to our understanding of how things should be? And in Genesis chapter 3, you have the right after the humans have made the decision that they've made, God shows up on the scene, and it says that God was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, or the breeze of the day could be felt. And so what we have here is that we have a picture, albeit this picture is through the lens of the humans rejecting God's good, but it's still painting a picture of the reality of these humans together with God. That God is not distant away from him. In the reality of the pre-fall, God has an ability to walk with them, talk with them. And so when we get back to Revelation chapter 22, what do we see? God finally returns, and now he is with them. What God is doing in Revelation 22 is returning the world back to Genesis 1-2. Okay? What God is doing in Revelation 22, 21 and 22, is returning the world back to what it should be, like it was in Genesis 1 and 2. Now, what does that have to do with our forever? What is it going to be like in heaven? You're just like, Joe, you just gave me this breakdown of like all these other things, but what is it going to be like in heaven? Here's my argument. If God desires for this world to return to what he first set up, which he called good, and he's not a liar, he's going to return it back to that, maybe the forever status of the humans in heaven, or God's kingdom, or heaven on earth, whatever you want to call it, the forever status of our existence will be living out what we were supposed to do in Genesis 1 and 2, which is to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the earth, to rule, to create. Now, when we read the word to multiply, I love how Tim Mackey at the Bible Project poses this reality. To be multiply is not just about reproduction, sexual reproduction. To multiply is for us to actually continue to advance our human element. For instance, when dogs multiply, they create more dogs, as Tim Mackey would say. When rabbits reproduce, they create more rabbits. But when humans reproduce, when humans multiply, we create culture, we create civilizations, we create realities of technology, of buildings, of indoor plumbing, of television, of amazing tequila that has hints of whiskey in it. This is what humans are capable of, and it is good, and God always wanted it to be that way, but without the stain of sin. So our forever, in my opinion, and this is just Joe's opinion, this is what I think heaven's going to be like. I think we're going to have exactly what we have now. I think we're going to be in realities where we create, where we fulfill the things that we love to do. Maybe there's a world where there are baristas out there that when you go in to order a coffee, their passion is to create the best cup of coffee, and heaven for them is living that reality out, you know? Maybe heaven for me is talking to people about Jesus. I love this. What I do right now, I absolutely love. Now, maybe I might be out of a job because I think, you know, Jesus will be with us. But whatever that is, I'm going to live out the reality of what is inside of me, and I'm gonna create, and I'm gonna multiply, and this is going to be heaven. I think we're gonna be with our families. Yeah, Jesus said there'll be no marriage in heaven, but that's just it. Marriage is a human construct. What he's not saying is that there won't be relationships in heaven. So I think we're gonna still have our relationships. I think I'll still know you as my friend. I still think I'll know my wife. Maybe I won't call her my wife, but we are connected, we are bonded together. And I think in heaven, we'll continue that reality. I'll know my children, they'll know me. Again, that might look not like it does now, but I don't think we're just gonna kind of be mindless, like we don't, I think it's gonna be a lot like this. But picture a world where there's no abuse of power. Picture a world where there's no disorder and war and rumors of war. Picture a world where there's no poverty. There's an end to hunger. Picture, you know, you got trees producing fruit, so end of hunger. Like, picture a world where the things that cause us to go, oh, like the things that grind on our spirit because we know it's wrong, a world where that won't exist. That will be heaven, and it'll be a good thing. So that's what I think heaven's going to be like. I think it's going to be a lot like this, but without all the things that cause us problems, like heartburn or me burping because I'm trying to talk while I drink some tequila. I think we'll have bodies that are free from decay and sickness. Well, will I have this body or my 15-year-old body? I don't know that matters. That's the wrong question. The question is that, are you living that reality now? Can you live heaven on earth? And remember what Jesus told his followers to pray. Pray every day. When you pray, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." We were meant to live the reality of heaven right now, right here, while we await the final reality of that glorious existence without the sin that holds us back. That's what heaven's going to be like. And we're invited to participate that in now, in the here and now. So having said all that, that's what I think heaven's going to be like. I don't know if that helped. I would love for you to leave your comments in the description. Reach out to me. Let me know what you think. How crazy am I? It's all good. I'll take it. I'm a big boy. Let me know what you're thinking. Like, subscribe, all those things if you're finding this stuff useful. And share it with people if you think this is a helpful video to think differently about what heaven's going to be like. Until then, though, enjoy your tequila or whiskey or whatever you got in front of you, as I am. This is delicious. I encourage you to, if you're in Mexico, to pick some up. Until next time, cheers.